Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly here, welcoming you back to the show this week. It's Friday, it's wet, it's raining, it's January in Vancouver, but hey, we're not here to talk about the weather or complain about the weather. We're here to talk about Formula One, and there are a lot of great stories going on in the F1 world this week, including a couple that I've classified as fake news, so I can't wait to get into that with you guys in a little bit here, but we are inching ever closer to the start of the season. We're now 40 days away from the Australian Grand Prix. And well, once we get inside a month, then we can, I guess, officially get excited that the eve of the season is literally upon us. But at least in the meantime, we do have car launches to look forward to. That's going to come up in just about 2 weeks' time. Ferrari are going to launch their car in Reggio Emilia in Italy on February 11th, followed by Renault and McLaren. AlphaTauri and Mercedes set to launch their cars on the 14th of February on Valentine's Day, followed by Racing Point, and then Haas and Alfa Romeo both going to launch their cars in Barcelona on the 19th of February, and only Williams and Red Bull have yet to confirm their launch dates. But Ferrari have said for the longest time, I mean, they said way before Christmas that they were going to launch their car on February 11th, and they're really focused, or at least that's the way that it's coming out in the press for their challenge for the 2020 Formula One World Championship. So just a couple of weeks away, so something definitely to look forward to. Anyways, the first big item of news comes from the FIA, and that they are ready to take any action as fears over the coronavirus grow. Of course, this is an ongoing situation. The World Health Organization declaring it an emergency on Thursday, and the FIA said that they are ready to take any action necessary to protect the motor racing community. We've got the Chinese Grand Prix coming up. Well, it's not really all that far away. The Chinese Grand Prix is set to go on the 16th to the 19th of April. I mean, a couple of months away. Hopefully that this coronavirus thing is well under control by then. But as of Thursday here on the west coast of North America, there was confirmed that it was almost 10,000 people have fallen ill, a couple of 100 deaths. So it's obviously a quite a serious situation. So hopefully that passes very soon. But like I said, Formula One is monitoring the situation, and also you look at some of the different governments around the world. I mean, the UK Foreign Office has warned against all non-essential travel to China and Canada. Federal government's done the same. They're organizing transport to repatriate Canadian citizens to bring them home. It's a very, very serious thing. Anyways, on Thursday this week, the FAA had the following to say, quote, following the coronavirus epidemic that broke out in China at the beginning of the year, the FAA is closely monitoring the evolving situation with relevant authorities and its member clubs under the direction of FIA Medical Commission President Professor Gerard Salian. The FIA will evaluate the calendar of its forthcoming races and, if necessary, take any action required to help protect the global motorsport community and the wider public. So anyways, if there's any decision that may affect the Chinese Grand Prix, that would have to come first from the race promoter in Shanghai. But like I said, I'm still a couple of months away. We're only at the end of January, and the Chinese Grand Prix is not set to go until the middle of April. So hopefully, like I say, that the crisis is well in hand and well under control by then. Anyways, moving ahead with motorsport news, and specifically Formula One news, Lawrence Stroll, father of racing driver Lance, is reportedly ready to put in a £200 million bid in order to secure a 20% major stakeholder share in Aston Martin, and that could drop as early as today. Apparently, this bid is going to be considered at a board meeting, which was supposed to have happened on Thursday night, so yesterday. He's going up against a rival bidder, which is a Chinese motor manufacturer manufacturer Geely. So yeah, like I say, they're both willing up to pay up to 200 million pounds for a 20% stake in the company, and would be able to also put some more money in while the details are finalized on the transaction. So Aston Martin is in urgent need of extra funding. Its share prices have fallen and profits have been much smaller than anticipated since an initial public offering in October 2018, which has been described by I love this the report that I found. It was described by one analyst as, quote, an abject failure. So obviously not very good. So they recently issued a profits warning stating that the 2019 numbers are going to be much worse than anticipated. So Aston Martin said that they remain in discussion with potential investors, and which may or may not involve more investment in the company and stuff like that. So anyways, they're basically neither confirming nor denying. Well, I guess they are confirming that they are talking with potential investors, but Geely, they only own significant stakes in other iconic brands like Lotus, Proton, Volvo, and they have technical partnerships across all their brands. So anyways, Stroll, he's made his money in fashion and with his business connections there, and of course he was the head of the consortium that stepped up to basically pull Force India at the time, that pulled them out of the jaws of almost a certain demise a couple of years ago, and they've rebranded as Racing Point, and there's been some talk here and there about stuff like that. So it kind of makes you wonder, should this go ahead, and if Lawrence Stroll is able to secure some sort of shareholder, like majority, well, not a majority shareholder, but secure that stake in Aston Martin, whether or not that would translate over into Formula One. There have been some rumors or rumblings here and there that perhaps they might be attracted to the support in some sort of capacity. They are, of course, one of the sponsors at Red Bull. So there already is a bit of a foothold into the sport, but this will have to be one that we're going to have to wait and see how it evolves over the coming weeks and months. Now, I did say off the top of the show that that there was some fake news out here, because this one, it's sort of been going around, and I found a lot of conflicting stories. But anyways, the one that seems to have underlined it and overturned all the rumors and the fake news out there comes from motorsport.com. And obviously they're a very, very good source, got good connections. And this is regarding Lewis Hamilton and, well, his future and also the future of Mercedes in Formula One. There was rumors, other stories going out. I saw them on several UK websites and publications earlier today that they were saying that Lewis was getting nowhere talks with Mercedes over his new contract, that they couldn't agree on money, and that in fact Mercedes are basically getting ready to pull the plug and walk away after they have a board meeting in about 2 weeks, something like that. Anyways, the story has basically been shot out of the water now by Motorsport, because Lewis Hamilton, both Mercedes have come out and said that the latest rumors that have been floating around there for a couple of days regarding their futures in Formula One are just not true. Anyways, Hamilton took to Instagram earlier this week or on Thursday to say, quote, FYI, Toto and I have not even spoken about a contract yet. Nothing is being negotiated currently. Papers making up stories. So even the report that that this was going to be a withdrawal from Formula One to save something, I think it was in the neighborhood of 770 million pounds or something like that, that was going to be tabled at a board meeting at Daimler, which is supposed to go on February 12th. But apparently, upon further investigation, that no meeting has been scheduled for that date. And also the chief executive Daimler has shot down any suggestion that the company was ready to pull the plug and walk away from Formula One. And Reuters asked this of Daimler CEO Ola Källenius earlier this week at a German auto industry reception in Berlin. And the answer was not true. So it has been a bit of an open secret for a couple of months that Mercedes has been considering evaluating their future in Formula One as they move into the new era in 2021, the cost cap and all that. And what with the Concorde expiring after agreement expiring this year, this situation is no different from anyone else. Toto Wolff told Motorsport.com, quote, "Everything indicates that we will stay, but is not a given. We are in the middle of discussing the new Concorde agreement in connection with this and independently of it. We are discussing the development of the automobile and its effect on the sport." Anyways, it is interesting, but Wolff did go on to say, quote, "We have four teams that we supply, including ourselves." He's talking now about engines. "You can only be pregnant or not pregnant, not half pregnant. So we either participate in the platform or we do not." And then when he was pushed a little bit further as staying in Formula One is solely as an engine supplier, if the works team actually quit the sport, and Toto went on to say, quote, "I don't think anyone would decide to leave F1, but if that were to happen, stopping customer supplies would also be a consequence." So that is kind of interesting. But, when you hear that, from Toto Wolff and also from the Daimler CEO that, obviously they're going to consider that. I mean, the new Concorde agreement is going to be a major, major thing. And, when you hear the people saying that, it really gives me, I feel a little bit more confident. I mean, Toto leaves the door open a little bit that it's not 100% set in stone. Of course, they have to see how everything shakes out. But on the flip side of that, they are being quite frank and saying that that all signs are pointing towards that they will stay. So, anyways, take that for what it's worth. I kind of threw that one in there into a bit of the fake news category, if you want to call it that, just because it is kind of interesting. I mean, just go on to Google right now and just search up the latest news regarding Mercedes, and there really is a lot of conflicting reports out there, and more of them tend to be more sensationalist and a little bit more on the side that is all doom and gloom at Mercedes, and it's kind of like a lot of rehashing of a lot of the stuff about Lewis and having the discussions and the talks with the Ferrari, which we've talked about at length here on the show over the past month or so, and that really isn't new news at all. Anyways, the next segment I want to get into is going to be more of the fake news, which is going to be kind of fun. Anyways, I want to speak about that at length, so I'm just going to break a little bit early for our first word from our sponsors. So don't go away. We'll be right back. Hey guys, I just want to take a quick break away from the show to talk to you about something I'm really excited about, and that's today's show is being sponsored by The Athletic, a subscription-based sports news site featuring quality content for real sports fans that goes way beyond the box score. The Athletic is setting a new standard for sports news because their coverage focuses on a mix of long-form journalism, original reporting, and in-depth analysis. At The Athletic, you're going to get quality journalism and in-depth coverage of your favorite team from local writers who really know what's going on, plus you're going to get great content from national writers you already know like Jay Glazer, Mike Sando, and Michael Lombardi. Get exclusive player profiles, deep dives on analytics, team power rankings, and fantasy sports insights you won't find anywhere else. Each subscriber gets a personalized feed of stories, live writer Q&As, and more. Just download the Athletic app, pick your favorite teams, and the Athletic will begin surfacing all the latest on the players and storylines that matter to you. The Athletic is clutter-free reading with no ads, no pop-ups, no autoplay video or clickbait. It's just good content because The Athletic is created for fans and not for advertisers. Your subscription to The Athletic is going to get you a ton of great things, including full access to all sports, teams, cities, and writers. The Athletic lets you customize and choose the content you care about, and it's going to get even better as more cities and writers are added to the site. So you're still not sold? Just check out some of the great journalists currently writing for The Athletic. For Major League Baseball, there's Ken Rosenthal, Jason Stark, Peter Gammons, and Jim Bowden. For the NBA, there's Shams Charania, David Aldridge, Sam Amick, and Zach Harper. For the NFL, there's Jay Glazer, Michael Lombardi, Lindsey Jones, Dane Brugler, and Bob Stern. And I know quite a few of the soccer people at The Athletic, and they're absolutely first class. For example, I was reading an article the other day written by my buddy Matt Pence called "How Nike, Adidas, and E-commerce Threaten the Survival of Mom-and-Pop Soccer Shops." It was a really great read, and honestly, it was a real eye-opener. So if you're ready to get started and would like to save 40% off a yearly subscription to The Athletic's complete library of written, audio, and video content covering professional college sports at a national local level, go to theathletic.com/overtime. That's theathletic.com/overtime. Once again, if you want to save 40% off a yearly subscription to The Athletic, go to, and this is all lowercase, theathletic.com/overtime. All right, well, welcome back to the show. And like I said before the break, this one I think is going to be kind of fun because this one, I had to go and crunch the numbers. After I saw this, I had to read into it a little bit more. I was a little bit suspicious about it. And so I had to a bit of a number cruncher and a nerd. I had to go and work it out for myself to see whether or not this is true. So enough sort of vague sort of skirting around the issue here. And this was from the mouth of Fernando Alonso, who said earlier this week that rival drivers in Formula One are not exploiting what he calls Lewis Hamilton's weaknesses. He feels that Lewis has weak points that haven't been exploited by his rivals in Formula One. And this was when he was asked to assess his recent achievements by F1 Racing magazine. And it is interesting what he had to say. He said he acknowledged that Lewis had raised his level in the past couple of years. And he feels that he did that, especially in 2019, when he felt that the W10 was not one of the most dominant Mercedes cars that they've fielded compared to the past couple of seasons. And he goes on to say if Lewis can't win, he's usually a very close second, not 20 seconds or 30 seconds further back, which usually happens. If the situation is reversed and Lewis is in the lead, then Valtteri Bottas is, if he's in second place, he's usually a good distance behind him. Anyways, this is the part where it gets really, really interesting for me. And Alonso goes on to say, quote, he still has some weak points that have not been stressed yet. No one is pressing that button, that weakness. He starts the year slowly and no one takes the benefit of that. We all get excited that this will be the year of Bottas, but it's not. It would be nice to compete against Lewis in a proper fight. Maybe his weak points are not real and everything is calculated, but it would be nice to discover. So that's what I thought was really interesting is when he said that he starts the year slowly and no one takes the benefit of that. So what I decided to do was to go back and look at the first five races of the year, going back to 2014. I didn't go back as far as 2008, Lewis's first championship season, because you know that's a completely different era in Formula One. So I just decided instead to look at the V6 turbo hybrid era and this unprecedented dominance of Mercedes over that time. Anyways, if you go back to 2014, out of the first five races, Lewis had one retirement and four first places. That first retirement came at the Australian Grand Prix, in which he had a cylinder go on him right at the very, very beginning of the race and retired in lap number two. Anyways, over the first five races, 100 points. 2015, three firsts, two seconds, 111 points. 2016, now this is the one that is the total outlier. So through the first five races, he started with a second, a third, a seventh, a second, and then he had a retirement, and then he had a third place. So, you know, not a great start to the season for Lewis there. Anyways, the seventh, that was at the Chinese Grand Prix. And there's a bit of a theme when you look at it over the years where he's had, you know, not the greatest start to the year. The Chinese Grand Prix has been a couple of them. But 2016, he had a damaged front wing after an incident we had with Felipe Nasr on the first lap, and he never really recovered from that. He never got higher than fifth, and eventually finished seventh. And then also in 2016, in that fifth race, he retired from that one. But of course, if you remember back to that race, that is when he and Nico Rosberg crashed on the opening lap, and I think it was in turn three at Barcelona. They both went off into the gravel. So that obviously not a great start to the season. 2017, a second, a first, a second, a fourth at the Russian Grand Prix, but he was a way back, but he'd struggled with overheating all race long. So it was basically, just manage the car and bring it home. And then after that, another fifth, another first. 2018, second, third, fourth, and then the last two races out of that first five races of the season, two wins, so 95 points there. And then last year, that's why I thought it was interesting. Alonso said that, he said that the car wasn't as dominant in 2019, but Lewis, 2019 through the first five races of the year, three first places, two second places, and 111 points. So if you take all of those six seasons and you average them out, he manages 95 points. He's averages 95 points through the first five races of the year. I mean, really, really repeatable stuff. I mean, 100 points, 111, 57, 98, 95, 111. Obviously, 2016 is the outlier there. And if you remember, after the first four or five races, Nico Rosberg had his fortunes were very much the flip side of Lewis's, and he'd built up I think it was about a 43 point lead at that point. And I obviously, he didn't win the championship at that point. I remember him being asked after, I think it was the fourth race of the year, that if, considering the point gap that he had or the lead he had in the world championship at that point, historically, stats suggested that he would go on to win the world championship. And he was kind of coy about it. He kind of played it down a little bit, saying that, there was still a very long way to go and all that sort of stuff. But anyways, I mean, Lewis was able to really fight back. I mean, at the end of the year, Nico did win that. The world championship, 385 points, only five more than Lewis Hamilton. But this is where it gets even more interesting. So I know that the schedule has fluctuated a little bit in terms of the total number of races. We started out way back in 2014 with 19 races, 21. We've had 20 in there a couple times. It basically, over the past six seasons, it's basically averaged out to 20 races a year. So if you take that 95 points that he's averaged over those first 5 years and extrapolate that, that works out to 381 points. And when you look at who finished second in the world championship, he wins all of those years. If he had 381 points, he would have beaten everybody, including himself in 2016, because way back in 2014, Nico Rosberg had 317 points, second of the world championship. Year after, 2015, Nico 322. In 2016, Lewis had 380 points. So, 381, he still would have been world champion. Vettel had 317 points and 320 points respectively in 2017 and 2018. And Valtteri Bottas has 326 points in 2019. So Lewis, I mean, just based on that, and that's why I think it's a really peculiar comment about Fernando Alonso saying that that he starts the season slowly. And well, when you break it down and look at it over six seasons, five races, there's 30 races right there. I mean, that's very, very repeatable stuff. And the spread goes from take out 57, from 2016, and you still have you take that one out, it's going to be pretty much he's averaging 100 points through those first five races of the year. And that's a lot. I mean, he's doing really building up his lead in the world championship, or really maybe not always the lead in the world championship, but certainly he's really setting the foundations for a solid challenge towards winning the title. And we've seen that year after year after year. So the big thing is, I think that we take away from that is that Lewis Hamilton is just an incredibly talented and incredibly consistent driver. And then also, I think maybe though the other thing that we have to consider is that that even though Alonso has that opinion that Lewis is perhaps a bit of a slow starter, that maybe he's seen things that Lewis is doing in the car that maybe he's not 100% convinced by the results or something like that, even though when you look at it in black and white on paper, it suggests completely the opposite. Although, Fernando was maybe put on the spot a little bit during the interview and didn't have the benefit of being able to sit down and pull all the stats and do all the number crunching and the geek stuff that I just did. But it would be a little bit... I would find it more interesting rather than, I find it a bit of a generic, almost a little bit kind of a vague statement from Fernando when he says that that Lewis is a slow starter to the season. That he obviously has that take, but I would be more interested in Fernando's perception on his judgment. What is it specifically? What are you seeing that he's doing in the car, out of the car, in the race, in qualifying, that leads you to that conclusion? Anyways, very, very fascinating. And I just had to, like I say, I couldn't resist once I saw that that quote or that that interview by Fernando. I had to go and check it out. And, you know, I my professional life, I deal exclusively with numbers. And that's the great thing about math. It either, it proves you right or wrong. And in this case, I feel entirely justified to say that I do not agree with Fernando Alonso. And therefore, I think that I'm going to throw that under the fake news category as well. Anyways, time for another break here on the Scuderia Formula One podcast. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this short message from our sponsors.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, well, welcome back to the show. I'm just going to stick here, and well, actually, we're not sticking with Mercedes for the moment. Anyways, I just want to talk now a little bit about Ferrari and Sebastian Vettel and Charles Leclerc. And this one's kind of interesting. This comes from the mouth of team principal Mattia Binotto, who insists that the rivalry between Sebastian Vettel and Charles Leclerc is an advantage, and this comes despite the fact that there were some controversial moments on the track last year. Obviously, the collision that they had in Brazil towards the end of the season was the big one, the one that got all the headlines when Sebastian was passed by Charles and then attempted to retake the position. And then when he moved across, he clipped Charles's front wing and they both crashed out of the race. And that led to, obviously a lot of discussion in and around Formula One. But I still maintain that I think that Ferrari did the right thing and did not drag that out into the public. They had the discussions. They did what they needed to do. First speaking to both drivers behind closed doors separately, and then talking to them and having everybody in the room at one time, because it was a tricky situation. I mean, there had been some controversy here and there. I mean, Charles was upset with the way that they handled things in Singapore, where Sebastian got the race win there, and there was other times during the year with team orders, a little bit earlier in the year. But anyhow, that was kind of a flashpoint, right? I mean, it's never good to, it's obviously the worst thing that you can do is to have an accident and crash out of the race. But the even worse part of that is when you have an accident and you crash into your teammate and both of the cars go out of the race. So, I mean, it was just an embarrassing moment for Ferrari, which kind of, for me, I think it kind of summed up the season as a whole. It was frustrating. It was just another thing that shouldn't have gone wrong, that did go wrong. And it was just a very anticlimactic, after they showed so much promise in winter testing, that when it came to actual racing, they just, they weren't anywhere close to having the pace of a Mercedes. And at times they didn't even have the pace to match the Red Bull. And it took a long time in the season, before they became competitive. Vettel had some moments, and Charles, I mean, just impressed all season long. But it was starting to boil over a little bit. Some of these disagreements that they'd been having, some of the unhappier parts, maybe a little bit of mistrust or suspicion and frustration on Charles's behalf after Singapore, all these sorts of things, they all add up, and it really had the potential to boil over. Anyways, I'm starting to ramble a little bit. Point is, I think that they really handled the situation well when it could have really blown up. I mean, it sounds that that even though that they've had their issues, that it's manageable, and it's not going to be become another Hamilton Rosberg situation, because that is still going back and thinking about the three seasons that they raced together, and well, especially in the turbo hybrid era, when they became so dominant, Mercedes, that it was just really those two that were fighting for race wins more often than not. And well, I mean, it's still basically the same when it comes to Mercedes. I mean, it's still basically the Bottas and Hamilton that basically would expect them to have or take the checkered flag at the end of the race. But it was just really amazing just how bad the relationship between Rosberg and Hamilton was, and just to all the incidents that they had at Spa, in Spain, in Austria. You know, the examples are numerous, and the fact that it got so bad that they actually had to take these guys aside and then publicly say that if things don't improve, that we're willing to part ways with one or both of these guys. And honestly, despite everything that happened, that I know that Lewis has won a bunch of world titles since then, but even so, I mean, at the time when he was just a double world champion, I mean, only two world championships, right? That they'd be willing to part ways with them, because I mean, I don't think there was ever any real question who was the better of the two drivers. I think that maybe that Rosberg was a little bit closer to Hamilton in terms of pace. I think that he pushed Lewis a little bit better at times than Valtteri Bottas does on a regular basis. But the point was, they just got the relationships between them was just so bad. I mean, toxic is the word that always comes to mind when I think about the Hamilton and Rosberg years. And that's really, I was starting to really keep an eye on the situation of Ferrari. How are they going to start handling that between Sebastian Vettel and Charles Leclerc? Because I had the feeling that, and I don't have any indication otherwise, but I certainly had the feeling that it had the potential to start going sour, start going bad, if they didn't step in there and do something sooner. Anyways, Mattia Binotto had the following to say, quote, "If I look at the two drivers at the moment and how they are behaving together, it works very well. There's a good spirit, a good benchmark, and in qualifying, when Charles is disappointed that he's behind Seb, it is good and positive. But between the two, after all the polemics that we may have read in the newspaper about the radio communication, that is one point that is not a concern at all. In fact, it is the opposite. It is a good lineup as well, quite different in terms of experience driving. For us, that is an advantage." And of course, I mean, anytime you have a driver like Charles Leclerc, obviously very, very talented, obviously very, very quick, and he looks like he's got all the attributes to do some amazing things in Formula One, despite being a guy that's still in his early 20s. He's going to be at Ferrari at least until 2024. I mean, the sky's the limit. I mean, he still has his whole career ahead of him. I mean, you look at Lewis Hamilton, 13 years older than Charles Leclerc, 22 for Leclerc, 35 for Lewis Hamilton. I mean, and Lewis is not showing any sign of slowing down. So, I mean, Charles, obviously one of the superstars, not only of the present, but also the future of Formula One. But then you put him against a guy like Sebastian Vettel. I mean, he's a four-time world champion. I mean, say what you will about Sebastian and the problems that he's had over the past 18 months or so, the guy is still a very good Formula One driver. He's still very fast, and he's a four-time world champion. I mean, that just didn't happen by accident in those years at Red Bull. I mean, Sebastian Vettel is a very, very good racing driver. And I think that when you get a guy like Vettel, who's done it all, seen it all, and is still, he might not be on the top of his game. That's why, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how he comes back this year. And hopefully they give a car that, I just don't think that that car that they had the last year or so just really suited Sebastian Vettel's driving style. He just looked like a guy that wasn't 100% confident behind the wheel. Whereas Charles, being Charles Leclerc, and all the things that he did with the C37 and sell your Alfa Romeo the year before. Obviously, that wasn't a great car, but he did much better things in that than Marcus Ericsson did. Anyways, I think that the SF90 was maybe a little bit better suited to Charles Leclerc and his driving style than Sebastian Vettel. And if they can improve upon that car, and hopefully they do for their own sake, that Vettel will be able to find some of his mojo again and do some of the things that we've been able to see. Because, I mean, it's been weird to see him struggle the way that he has and really have some of these horrendous results when, you know, we're used to seeing Sebastian Vettel winning races, winning world championships. But still, I mean, that is something that a guy like Charles Leclerc can learn from. I mean, Sebastian in his early 30s, not gonna, you know, a couple of years Lewis's junior, but you know, still, I mean, to have a guy that's young, raw talent, still learning, and that's the thing about Charles Leclerc. I mean, he's still so young at 22, and we've seen how good and how fast this guy is already, and it just makes me wonder, like, how much more are we going to see from Charles Leclerc as he gets older, as he matures, as he learns his craft even more. And that's why I think having him in the same team as Sebastian Vettel, it's Ferrari, is just a really, really good situation you know, for both of them and for the team. And that's why it was absolutely crucial for them to step in and solve that situation in Brazil before any sort of bitterness or any resentment from whichever side really boiled over and spoiled something that I think could still be a very, very good situation. Anyways, Binotto went on to say, quote, "You have to accept them because that is obvious. They are top drivers and they are there to do their best and to win. So what's important for me is that they understand what the overall objective and understand more about the overall situation in the race. Arguing on the radio is never the best because when you are in the car, you do not have the full picture. So then it's a matter of trust, trusting the team, even if you make mistakes, as the drivers may make them." So anyways, interesting look behind the scenes and thoughts from Matteo Binotto regarding Sebastian Vettel and Charles Leclerc. Anyways, time for one final break on the show here, and then we're going to start shutting it down. So don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
All right, well, welcome back to the show. It's a bit of a shorter show this week, but I mean, there's been some interesting things to talk about. Anyways, there's some McLaren news to talk about, and Lando Norris was saying on the Autosport podcast earlier this week that he really feels that McLaren, like the team, has got their confidence back, and that, you know, you have to really think that that is the case. I mean, this one's been a team that is really come out of the abyss. I mean, those years that they had with the Honda engine, those three seasons was just, it was really, really difficult to watch. I mean, not that I have any, you know, stake in you know, McLaren to see them succeed, other than maybe personal enjoyment, but to see a team that has you know, done so many good things in Formula One, won so many races, won so many championships, and then to see them really fall off the edge like they did was just really, really painful to watch. And this past year and a bit really, I think, has been a good indication and a good sign that that things are really starting to turn around for them. And I know that I've probably said it several times on the show now, but I really give a lot of credit to Zach Brown for doing the job that that he's done. I mean, to me, he just seems like a guy that goes out there, does what needs to be done, and he's not really there to, you know, to really go and try and make a name for himself. He's there to do the right thing and help the team and get the right people in there to do the job and do their jobs, more to the point, so they can have a competitive car to have better results. And we definitely saw that manifest more in 2019. I mean, there were some indications even in 2018, but 2019, I think, was the first positive step forward. So of course that is the only one season. Was that a bit of a flash in the pan? Is this something we're going to see again this year in 2020? Of course, we'll just have to see how the season plays out. And then it also depends too. I mean, it might be a bit of a false indicator that if they don't have a great year, it might be just more of the point that rather than kind of really push ahead when they think that it's better to spend their time and money and invest that in the development for the new car. I mean, because 2021 obviously is going to be completely different. They might just decide at some point, okay, well, the car is what it is right now. We're not going to develop too much more in the car for this year. We're going to put all those resources or more resources into the 2021 car rather than, the different iterations and variations that the car undergoes throughout the entire season. So, I mean, that may not be this season may not be the best indicator, because like I say, I mean, if they don't have a great year, it may not be that the car isn't great. There's just basically could be the refocusing of energies elsewhere. But just in general, I mean, they have some very good people there, with like James Keeve that came over from Toro Rosso. You've got Jill DeFerrin, the sporting director, ex-racing driver. Then you've got Andreas Seidel, team principal. And, getting those right people into the organization, putting them, well, I mean, it's just one thing getting them in there, but it's also putting them in the right position within the company, within the team, and letting them get about their work and doing what they need to do. And slowly but surely, those key appointments have been made, and they've gone on to do what they've needed to do. And we're seeing those results on the track. And that's why I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens in terms of drivers. I'm not exactly sure what Carlos Sainz's contract situation is, or Lando Norris. I think a lot of Lando Norris. I found him very impressive in his first season in Formula One in 2019. And it's going to be fun to watch and see this young guy progress and evolve and grow in Formula One. Carlos Sainz, on the other hand, I think he's a good racing driver. I think that that he's a consistent driver. I don't really think he's the kind of guy that's really going to light it up and really storm or take Formula One by storm. I think that he could be counted on to be bring points home from the team, but I just don't know if he's really that caliber of a driver. He's obviously a good driver. I don't really count him in that sort of that top tier of drivers in Formula One. I mean, it's obvious who all those guys would be, but that would be for me maybe one area that's maybe deserves a little bit more scrutiny and keeping an eye on over the season. I mean, the only knock against Lando Norris, and this is just maybe being a little bit picky more than anything, is just his age, maybe his I don't want to say lack of experience in Formula One. I mean, he's already got a season under his belt, but I mean, it's just age and just him just learning his craft and becoming a more mature racing driver. But I just don't know how much more we're going to see from Carlos Sainz. I expect to see more out of Lando Norris over this year and going forward. I just don't know if we can expect to see the same from Sainz. Anyways, I think that to make a long story short, I do think that Lando does have it right when he says that the team has got their confidence back. Anyways, the next couple of cool things, and if you want to find some audio for that, just go into social media, go into the team's websites. But both McLaren and Mercedes showed footage this year firing up the engines in their cars for the first time this season, and it's great. I mean, the Mercedes clip that I heard, I think it was on Twitter, on Facebook, there was no associated video with it. It was just the engine sound, and it was great. It was good to hear. Wasn't any super high revs or anything, but it was cool to hear also the McLaren do the same thing. And they did have the following to say. This came from Andreas Seidel. Quote, "Together with our colleagues from Renault, we successfully fired up the new car today for the first time. As it is every year, this is an important milestone. We have plenty of hard work ahead of us over the coming weeks, but it's great to see the commitment inside the team and everything going to plan as we continue to prepare the car for launch and the first tests." And there you go. So Ferrari, same thing. They fired up their car already. So slowly but surely, we are starting to see the first signs of the 2020 season, even though if it's just engine fire-ups, next car launches, and it's winter testing. So you can tell I'm getting excited just talking about it. Anyways, when it came to Mercedes, it was good to see. Again, it was just a little bit of audio on their Twitter and their social media accounts, so that it's going to be cool. And so they are making their debut 5 days before the start of winter testing in Barcelona, and the on-track debut will not be public, but they are going to share their images and video of the car during that day. Anyways, Haas, again, I mentioned some of the car launches off the top of the year or top of the show. So the VF20, that's set to debut on February 19th. And they're going to, it's kind of funny, they're just like Alfa Romeo, they're launching them both of those cars in Barcelona. Haas is going to unveil their car at 8 a.m. local time, which is 15 minutes before Alfa Romeo. And so they're both basically leaving it to the 11th hour. Basically, I think the driver's going to hop in the car and do some testing right after that. But Haas is going to be another one that's going to be interesting to watch, because, I mean, their season last year in 2019 was very, very disappointing. So they've, in my mind, I think they've got a lot to prove this year. And they've struggled a little bit since, they've come into Formula One. I know they've been in for several years now, but they really have not been able to really progress forward. I mean, they do have all the support from Ferrari and all that, but it hasn't really translated to more consistent results on the track. And they're kind of ups and downs. I mean, their form seems to fluctuate a little bit more than other teams. Anyways, that's just maybe that's my imagination, but certainly 2019 was not a good year for Haas. Anyways, I'm going to leave it there and shut it down for this week. Thank you very much, as always, for downloading and listening to the show. If you want to do us a favor and show us, and lend some support, the easiest way to do that is go over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you download and listen to your shows, and leave us a 5-star rating and review if you like the show. That would be great. It certainly helps us grow it and become more visible, and we appreciate all the support that you lend us. Anyways, if you want to get in touch, if you have any comments or feedback, the easiest way is to get in touch via email at scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com, or also for shorter messages, you can also get a hold of us on Twitter at scuderiaf1pod. And that's it. That's a wrap. As I said, thank you so much for listening. Have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you again this time next week. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.